This is the Vet Alumni Podcast with Tech and Prem.
Vet Alumni Podcast. I'm Tech. He's Prem. Music producers talking Philly sports. Yesterday was the anniversary of the death of Notorious B.I.G.
Man, Biggie.
And we will honor it throughout the show. But we start with the Mort Report.
Yes.
Chris Mortensen reported Monday that Jeffrey Lurie instructed the coaching staff and GM that Jalen Hurts will be the starting quarterback going forward. There will be no competition. I believe this is the right move.
It's the only move. You spent a second-round pick on him. He's an All-American from college, former Heisman runner-up, played a national championship game.
Yep.
I mean, this is a guy that, when you think about it, we were so excited for Carson coming in. He didn't even play at Division I college, right?
Or no.
Right, he played North Dakota State.
Yeah.
So, and we were excited for him to come in, and he played well right out the chute. So why, if a guy like that can come in and play well out the chute, why can't a guy that was in national title games come and play well out the chute? I mean, I don't understand the people that say, oh, they don't believe in Hurts. He's giving you no reason not to believe. He's also giving you no real reason to believe, I guess, except for the idea that a guy with that pedigree understands football, can learn, is a born leader.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you totally. I don't get it. I'm driving around. I'm listening to what everybody else is listening to about Jalen Hurts not showing enough. I haven't seen enough. And, you know, they should draft a quarterback. It's like, I don't understand this.
No, think back to Donovan, right? Comes in midway through the 99 season or towards the end. Does similar to how Jalen Hurts was introduced. He played a few games in the end of the 99 season, which ironically was season started by Doug Peterson, a quarterback. And then 2000, you know, he had an average year. These guys need to play.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
It is that simple.
You got to play. Like, you're not going to come in and look like Peyton Manning in his seventh year out the chute. And I feel like more and more and more, that's what fans expect. But it doesn't work that way in the NFL.
So let me read you these things. Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network said he thinks both Justin Fields and Trey Lance have a higher ceiling than Jalen Hurts.
It's possible. You know, maybe they do. This is a case, in my opinion. I don't mind that guy. He's okay. This is a case of just the national media, again,
right,
coming at Philly, trying to get people riled up about the idea of how he's selecting a quarterback after the owner just came out and explicitly basically said, in so many words, don't select a quarterback.
Right.
It's just kind of like that national fodder, like we saw with Ryan Clark when the whole Carson controversy was going down.
Chris Sims from NBC Sports said that there's nothing he's seen that leads him to believe that Jalen Hurts is a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Well, Chris Sims wasn't a starting quarterback in the NFL either.
No, but in all fairness, he's been right. When you go back and
he's
going to research.
Him and Florio are real good. I definitely, in the morning, if I do turn a television on, which is rare, and I really don't watch much TV, but when I do sit down and eat something, I'll turn on something on sports networks.
Right.
And I do like watching Florio and Sims, but Sims is always colored anti-Eagles.
Yeah, for some reason. I don't get that.
He's always like a quiet, passive-aggressive.
It seems aggressive. That way. Maybe.
Well, his dad was a New York Giant.
Well, okay. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Stephen A. Smith does not like that they're handing the starting job to Hurts without him already being an elite player.
Stephen A., man, I feel like a lot of the stuff that you hear out of his mouth on First Take with Max Kellerman is strictly to have heated debates for television.
Yeah, well.
How is a guy coming out of college going to be elite after four games with a broken team?
I have no idea.
Explain that to me. Even if the offensive line was all together and they had more protection, then it still would have only been four games. You got an offensive line that is going to be coming back as of right now, largely healthy and looking pretty deep after all, which is ironic with how they look. You have Brandon Brooks, unless he gets traded, which you might get to. Or Lane Johnson, those guys are coming back. Kelsey coming back.
Yeah.
Left side of the line looking stronger with Mailata, who can start, or Dillard, who's still going to get a shot to start, maybe.
Yeah, and I like some of these guys like Jack Driscoll.
Seumalo's going to hold down the left guard spot. This line looks surprisingly strong now. So you got to see Hurts. You got to see Hurts develop into elite level play. It doesn't just happen from the jump. Not everybody's going to be RG3 in his rookie year or Cam Newton in his rookie year. It doesn't work that way.
But are reports like these actually good for the confidence psyche of one Jalen Hurts?
I think Jalen Hurts is a very, from what I can gather from a distance, obviously, Jalen Hurts is a very reserved yet calm, powerful leader type.
Yeah.
He doesn't say much. He doesn't express much. Kind of stoic. Kind of hard to figure out what he's thinking and feeling. I like guys like that at the quarterback position instead of guys like the Phillip Rivers, who you always know that he probably is constipated on the field. My point being is Hurts looks like a leader. He's been a leader where he's gone.
Confident dude.
Confident guy, strong. This guy's squatting like, I think something like 600 pounds.
Which
he squats.
Is unbelievable.
It's just ridiculous. He's a strong guy, a smart kid, and let the kid go out there and try to ball out. You got some speed on the outside. You have a solid tight end because Goddard will be the guy most likely with Ertz likely departing. You have a good supporting cast with the running backs. I think that they have a bit more of a ceiling than we might have talked about at this point.
I may be speaking too soon, but, you know, reports like these, I look at them like these are positive. This kid is a strong-willed, heart of a champion kind of mentality. Very good leadership qualities. You can tell the locker room loves him.
Yeah.
I think it's good for... I think he's confident enough in his own abilities that he reads these reports or sees them on TV and laughs them off and says, I'm going to work on my game.
I'm sure. And, you know, you always hear the phrase, once the game slows down.
Yeah.
For a guy like Jalen Hurts, the game is going to slow down.
Absolutely.
Because he's a dedicated hard worker everywhere he's been. I mean, his pedigree is there. I'm excited to see him get a shot. I'm glad that Lurie came out and kind of gave him the public vote of confidence, especially on the heels of the quarterback disaster that they just dealt with.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Brandon Brooks possibly getting traded. Reports of a possible Zach Ertz trade are flying around as expected, but a report about Brandon Brooks popped up this week. Making the Hurts decision while shopping Brandon Brooks seems counterproductive, though, does it not?
I completely agree. That's probably your best offensive lineman, and he's battled some very serious injuries the past few years, so you still have that question in the back of your mind, is he even going to play 16 games, 17 games? But you can't move a guy like that if you really want to give a young quarterback a chance.
Right.
To do anything, you know, especially on his strong side, on his right
side. I agree. He's one of the best in the game.
He is. When I think the last full season he played, PFT, Pro Football Focus, rather, had him ranked top three at his position.
I mean, that's someone that you need in Jalen Hurts' first full year as a starter.
Because you're going to see a lot more of Miles Sanders, while I'm hoping at least.
We
got to get Scrap on again soon.
Yes.
We got to get Miles coach Sanders, Scrap. Youth football coach Scrap Wilson. Yeah, man, I agree with you. I think that moving a guy like Brooks would be completely counterproductive to any potential progress from a guy like Jalen Hurts at quarterback.
In the meanwhile, it looks like they're doing a lot of contract reconstructing to be able to be competitive this year, essentially kicking these salaries down the road. Is this a smart strategy for a rebuilding team, Prem?
I think, unfortunately, it's kind of the only strategy right now.
It
seems
that way.
Because of the predicament with the dead cap hit at $33.8 million for Carson, plus some of the other contracts that they cut ties with that they're probably going to have to eat some money, like Alshon, I believe they're still going to have to eat some money on that, right?
Right.
Deshaun gone. You alluded to Ertz probably getting traded or released. So I think it's the only strategy because you want to give yourself a little flexibility now to at least, if you have a guy like Jalen who comes out and plays well, you do want to be able to have some pieces around him in the event that he is a phenom. We don't know yet.
Right.
What if he comes in and what if he comes in like Carson's rookie year? Carson started 3-0. What if Jalen comes in is 3-1 out the chute? Then people are going to be saying, "Oh, I wish they would have not been rebuilding so much, and I wish they would have just signed a big receiver or da 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 da." Well, they're only going to say that once they see Jalen balling out.
Right.
So So you have to bank on both in a sense, and I think that's why this is the only move. You have to do the restructuring, but they're probably going to be in the same predicament 2-3 years down the line.
New York Giants GM Dave Gettleman, he doesn't share this philosophy. He said, this is not what you want to do. You don't want to just kick salaries down the road and put your team in a worse position 2 years down the line.
What do they call that? Bulletin board material?
Right.
You know, anything that clown up there in New York says, you know, we got to take that with a grain. That guy, he hasn't done anything yet.
No, he hasn't done anything.
Although I will say, Giants are a dark horse to win this division only because Daniel Jones is going into his third season at that point. Saquon Barkley coming back. Their defense actually was a bit improved from the year prior. They added some veterans on the defensive side. So I think Gettleman, his opinion doesn't really bother me too much.
No, me neither. Doesn't the Dave Gettleman parody account follow us?
It does, and that's actually a very, very close friend and business partner of mine that runs that
is
account.
It is. I find that account to be particularly hilarious.
It is rather hilarious. You know, basically, for our listeners, it's David A. Gettleman, Gettleman. Go check it out if you want to laugh at the Giants' expense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, look, we got a great, great show lined up. The Vet Line is packed. Zach Berman from The Athletic is going to join us.
Huge. Vince Quinn, CBS Sports Radio and WIP, going to join us.
Hang on just another minute, because Zach Berman is coming up next.
Pro Line Music.
Located at 490 Lincoln Highway in Fairless Hills, PA.
Pro Line Music.
Everything for the musician. Carrying all major brands. You find a better price, we'll beat it. Offering lessons in person or virtual. On-site repair service center. Rentals. Recording studio.
Pro Line Music. Call 215-736-8055.
One more time.
215-736-8055.
Yes, sir.
Pro Line Music.
Everything for the musician.
Vet Alumni. And now, it's the Vet Line.
Why don't you answer your phone?
Today, we're joined on the Vet Line by Zach Berman, Eagles reporter for The Athletic and author of the book Underdogs. Zach, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Most definitely. Right into the birds talk. From your point of view, what would you say is the present state of the team? And what's your overall level of optimism for the reconfigured squad?
I would say the present state is it's a team in transition, right? Like that's the reality of this is that they had a core that was in place for, you know, 4 or 5 years. They tried to squeeze everything they could out of the window with that team. Or into the window, I should say, with that team. And I think they realize now that that they need to transition. And so you're going to see them moving on from some guys who have been fixtures here, right? So that's the current state. As far as my optimism about the team itself, look, I think they have a flawed roster. I thought that a year ago, and it really showed up during the season. They don't have a lot of young talent. Now, in the NFL, I don't think you're like 5 years away from competing, right? If they True. Can hit on some draft picks, if they can develop some of the young players on the team, and they get quality play from the quarterback, whether it's Jalen Hurts or whether it's someone else, then they're not far away from competing for the division. As far as being a legitimate NFC contender, you know, I think they really need to start hitting on some of these picks, and that's been a problem in recent years.
Yeah, and then you mentioned Jalen Hurts, kind of leading me to my next question. A report came out this week that suggests that Jeffrey Lurie truly does want to build around him properly. I read that as an admission almost that he didn't do so properly around Carson. With that said, what do you expect in the draft and free agency as far as some names that you would target if you were in the personnel department?
Well, first off, I disagree with what the organization did around Carson, right? I mean, you can argue, and it's true that they missed on some of these, but as far as like being dedicated to building around the quarterback, I don't think there's much more they could have done. They spent big money on Alshon Jeffrey. They paid Torrey Smith, Mike Wallace, and DeSean Jackson as veteran free agents or trade targets. They've spent, if you look at their draft picks since Carson got here, outside of 2017, every first round and second round pick has been on offense.
Yeah.
And so they've been committed to building around Carson. They've just missed on some of these picks and the evaluations of some of the veterans. And that's the reality of it. But it wasn't a lack of commitment. And I don't think that will change with Jalen Hurts. I think the question more with Jalen Hurts is he the guy? What type of patience are you going to exercise if he is the quarterback next year? And what does he need around him to be successful? Because you do have a window when he's on a rookie contract, when if he is your quarterback, you can take advantage of that window. As far as the draft, my position is this. Disregard every single position on your roster. Don't even look at your depth chart. Don't think who's there. The only question you're thinking about at number six is who has the best chance to be a top of the league player, like a blue chip player. And obviously you place a premium on premium positions, but if Sewell is there at six and you think he can be a top left tackle in this league, it doesn't matter that Andre Dillard and Jordan Mailata are on your roster. If you think Kyle Pitts has the best chance of being a Hall of Fame player of anyone in this draft, then it doesn't matter that Dallas Goedert's on your roster. The Eagles are not good enough to think about who's on their roster. The only thing that should be guiding them is who has the best chance to be an elite player in this league. And by the way, that should include quarterback as well.
Hey, Zach, with the owner instructing the staff and the GM that there won't be a quarterback competition, directly contradicting Nick Sirianni saying there will be a competition at every position, is this a bad look for the organization? And if so, how bad of a look is it?
Well, so I saw Chris Mortensen's report, and Chris Mortensen's an outstanding reporter. I'm certainly not one to disagree with what he puts out there. The understanding I had after the Carson Wentz trade was that they like Jalen Hurts. Obviously, they drafted him in the second round. They were intrigued by what they saw last year, but they're going to keep like all their options open. Now, it would certainly behoove them to give Hurts the opportunity and build pieces around him. And if that directive is in fact coming from Jeffrey Lurie, is it a bad look? I think that can be overstated some. Like, Jeffrey Lurie has been involved in these big decisions since for years. He was on the plane to North Dakota when they scouted Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm. He's not an absentee owner now. If he's the one making the decision on whether Jalen Hurts is the guy or not, then that's a different discussion. But if it's the type of thing where he's kind of looking at the evaluations that have come to him and have said, like, you know, they made this investment in him, they think he has talent, they should build the team around him, and then they'll figure out in a year if he's the guy or if he's not the guy. It does, you know, that's a defensible position, and I think sometimes we try to label, like, where's that decision coming from? If it's an organizational decision and spearheaded by the owner, it's his team, right? And so I don't think he's Jerry Jones in that, like, he's not the one making every single pick here, but it's naive to think that he's not involved, and he's been involved, and he will be involved. And I would also add, the Eagles have been enormously successful during Jeffrey Lurie's time as owner. So,
true.
So I don't necessarily know if it's a bad thing, but there are nuances to that conversation as far as where the directive's coming from, how it's coming, things of that nature.
How common is it for an organization to be run this way, where the owner makes the football decisions instead of, you know, relying and trusting on his football people to make them?
Well, I mean, once again, it's the answer I just gave. There's nuance in the conversation. Like I think the way you portrayed it is almost as if like Jeffrey Lurie's coming out of nowhere and saying do X, right? There's a lot to that. Like Jeffrey Lurie's in the room when they're making these decisions. You know, so when Jalen Hurts is drafted, that was a virtual room, but the question is this: is he making evaluations? Is he making strategic decisions? And this concept of like your football people, I'm saying like that's a nebulous term, right? You know, there's so much that goes into these decisions that I would just urge you like to think of this with far more nuance than, you know, these kind of black and white decisions.
Yeah,
does that make sense? It does,
man. I just want to take a little side note. I got a kick out of how you just responded to the Tech. See, in our little two-person team here, Tech is the emotional, acting on impulse Philly guy.
I can't help it.
I'm more of the logical, take a step back, look at the numbers guy. So that's our balance here, our duality here at the show.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know it's not like a popular answer because the default is like either praise or rip, but my personality tends to be like, you know, that these are all three-dimensional people, these are three-dimensional decisions, right? So we can look at it as like a fairly binary decision. But there's a lot that goes into it, and I think we really need to understand the complexities of these decisions and what's leading to how they're made. It's not just a decision that you need to look at; it's the process. So if Jeffrey Lurie is coming in out of nowhere and saying do that, that's problematic. If that's what the question is, that's problematic. And how rare is that, or how common is that in the NFL? You don't see that often. You know, you've heard the story, for instance, when Dwayne Haskins was picked in Washington, when Daniel Snyder did just that, right? And it kind of went against what maybe the coach wanted or the coach evaluated. But my sense is that Jeffrey Lurie is very involved here, but that he's involved to the point that, like, he's getting information funneled to him from all parts of the building, right? And so I don't think it's like an absentee component, if that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So, Zach, knowing what we know now about Jeffrey Lurie, is this fan base too rough on Howie Roseman?
Well, you know, so here's the thing. Like, I mean, when you say too rough, look, they've had bad drafts and they've had bad decisions, and he deserves, he's the one with final say.
But isn't Lurie in on some of these bad picks?
I mean, but they all are, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
That's
right,
the thing.
Right.
It's like, I mean, I don't mean to like, to not be going along with the narrative here, but
that's why we got you on, Zach. We want the real, uncut, unfiltered story.
Yes.
But my point is that there's a lot that goes into this, right? And so it's not like one person saying do X. There's a lot of people involved here, and I mean, there are decisions that I think Jeffrey Lurie is more involved in than others, and he's absolutely responsible for it. But then there's like Howie Roseman's job is to collect information, and to kind of take take the opinions of the different parts of the operation, whether it's the coaching staff, whether it's the scouting staff, whether it's the analytics department, right? And come up with the most informed decision, you know. And I should include the medical staff in there, because there are decisions that have come up that the medical staff have been very involved in. But to get back to Howie Roseman, right? I mean, he was the executive of the year in 2017 when they built a Super Bowl, and he got a lot of love in the city, and rightfully so, because he built a team that won the Super Bowl. They were 4-11. They were 4-11-1 last year, and Howie was the general manager for that team too, and had final say. And so he certainly deserves criticism for what has happened since then. But once again, I don't look at it as like this black and white thing. Like two things can be true at the same time. Yeah. He did a really good job building that roster, and he's made poor decisions in the past few years that have come back to bite them. Is he a good GM? Is he a bad GM? Like, that's up for different people to determine. I think he's talented at his job, but I think he's made some mistakes that have been particularly costly in recent years. And frankly, I think Howie would probably tell you the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It's, you know, it's plus and minus, and they're mutually exclusive. Both can exist at the same time. I'm on the same page with you there for sure. Nick Sirianni, give us your first impressions of the new head coach.
You know, I'm still trying to get to know him more. I think that young, energetic, I've heard good things about him, but certainly doesn't come in with a lot of experience, and there's a lot of unknown here. And the staff he put together, you know, there's some talent on that staff, but once again, there's a lot of unknown there. So, you know, I'm going to reserve judgment until, like, I've been to one of his practices. I've seen him operate with the players. You know, it's so early on, but it was an interesting hire. I've heard good things about him. But, you know, whether he's an upgrade over Doug Peterson, time will tell. Now, that being said, in 2016, there was skepticism about Doug Peterson. He won a Super Bowl, right? You know, and in 2013, there was a lot of excitement over Chip Kelly, and he got fired after 3 years. So it's the type of thing where you need to see the way they coach. You need to see the way they manage. You need to see the way they operate in the building. There's a lot that goes in there. And so all the impressions are really preliminary at this point.
Yeah, and we didn't really see too much yet except for that one press conference. You know, and my personal opinion, Zach, is that he did seem a little unprepared. Maybe it was just nerves. Do you pass that off as just some nerves, or is that more lack of preparation?
It's a good question. Maybe a little bit of both. I think a part of it too is he didn't quite know how to answer some of those questions. But
yeah,
you know, because they were in a weird spot with Carson at the time, right? That
True.
Being said, that's the job. You know, I'm not gonna be entirely sympathetic for that, because like you're the head coach, you're being asked about your quarterbacks. That's part of being a head coach, right?
Especially in this city.
Especially in this city. You know, it's not like he's being asked about, you know, nuclear policy where he doesn't have the background in it. Like these are decisions that he's going to be involved in, and so I think they're certainly fair to ask. I think he would probably want the way he answers some of those questions back. I'm not in position to say whether it was like a matter of nerves or being unprepared, but I also don't think that like a single press conference is indicative of anything except like first impressions and the stories that we're writing.
Absolutely.
I don't think it has anything to do with the way he's going to coach the team. But I'm not going to like let him off the hook on some of, you know, because that's part of being a head coach is figuring out what you're doing at quarterback.
Yeah.
We know they're shopping Zach Ertz. They're taking calls about Brandon Brooks. What's the latest you've heard?
Well, I mean, Zach Ertz, I don't expect him to be back next year. That's been the case since really September. I don't see that changing.
Right.
And so the, the question is he going to be traded? Are they going to grant him his release so he can pick his team? You know, the contract situation is complicated there, right? Because he's going to want a new deal. But I would bet on Zach Ertz being a really good player wherever he is next year. I still think he's one of the best tight ends in the league. I understand why both sides are ready for a split here, but I think this is one that the Eagles are not going to be a better team when Zach Ertz is not on it. I'll put it that way. As far as Brandon Brooks, I'd expect him to be back next season. You know, I certainly understand why you would look into to trading a 30, 31-year-old guard at that salary. But, you know, when he's healthy, he's as good as any guard in the league. That's going to be a tough salary to move at this point. Mm-hmm. So I would put better odds on him playing right guard for the Eagles next year than playing right guard for someone else.
And that sounds good to me because yeah. That man is quite an NFL player. He really is when healthy. We need him. We need Lane too, and it seems that they're on track, which is exciting. So, Zach, we really do appreciate you taking the time to give us your insight, your thoughts, and your information here. Something we do at the Vet Alumni is we have a growing collection of sports media professionals in Philadelphia that are a part of what we call the Vet Alumni Members Association for being on the show. And we'd like to extend that invitation here to you as well.
I appreciate it. Glad to come on. Always enjoy talking this stuff. Hope my answers were okay. You know, I'm if you want me to come on and like rip or praise Jeffrey or no, that's not. I mean, once again, you know, I'm probably not on the speed dial for those types of takes. I tend to kind of look at it in a different way.
Absolutely.
And the one thing I'll say here is that like Howie has a critical offseason in front of him, right?
Does.
Whether he's a good GM or bad GM, that's in the eye of the beholder, but he cannot afford to miss on pick number 6. And I think he would tell you the same thing.
No, he cannot. He cannot. And for our listeners, you can check out Zach's work at The Athletic and be sure to buy his book, Underdogs, about the 2018 Eagles. Zach, thanks again, man.
Anytime. Thanks.
Thanks, Zach.
Numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie. You know that.
Men lie, women lie, numbers don't. Numbers don't lie.
Look at the numbers. The numbers don't lie.
Keeping it real. 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 Keeping it real.
Numbers don't lie. Man, Zach Berman was all that, man.
That was a good interview.
He is the man.
Definitely. We're excited that we were able to get Zach on. I'll tell you that, guys.
He was able to shut down my narrative right away, wasn't he?
No nonsense. No nonsense. You got guys that are Eagles beat reporters like that with that type of pedigree in the press conference every time asking the tough questions.
Yeah.
They know how to answer tough questions.
Oh, yes, they do. They know how to toe that line. But no, Zach was tremendous. And speaking of tremendous, we have some tremendous numbers.
Well, Tech, this past weekend was the NBA All-Star Game, as
yes,
we
was.
Know. The game itself is typically a high scoring affair. This one was a tally of 170-150.
Yeah.
Team LeBron defeating Team Durant.
No defense.
Let me say this, though. We talked about this off the air. I hate this new format with the guys picking teams like in the old gym class.
Me too.
I want East and West.
East, West.
There's something about East, West. It just reminds you of like Jordan back in the day versus Olajuwon
and
in the All-Star games. Yeah,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, of
you
course.
Know, that's
NBA hoops.
Yeah, exactly. I still got a bunch of NBA hoops playing cards.
Oh, yeah.
From the 90s. So I thought it was appropriate to mention some great numbers from NBA All-Star Game history.
Fantastic.
This game actually reached a record of its own. Team LeBron, 60 points, 60 points in the second quarter were the most ever scored in any quarter of any NBA All-Star Game.
Wow.
They had 100 at the half, dude. 100 at the half. The fewest points ever scored in an entire All-Star game, conversely, was in 1953 by the East.
Mm.
They only dropped 75 points in the whole game. So LeBron's second quarter would have only lost that game 75-60.
That's unbelievable.
Absolutely unbelievable. You know, different era in basketball. No shot clock back then. That plays a role with no shot clock. But,
true.
The most threes ever drained in an All-Star game was also Team LeBron in 2019. They sunk 35 threes. 35 threes. LeBron, ironically, I'm not too surprised with this, except for MJ, has the most career points in All-Star Game history. 389 points in his career and the most career minutes in All-Star Game history.
Oh,
460.
Man. That's LeBron.
LeBron's the All-Star Game king.
Yeah, he is. He
really is. But the rebound king is none other than Wilt Chamberlain.
Wilt.
197 boards in All-Star games.
Wow.
That record will never be touched.
No.
It won't even come close. Moses Malone actually holds the mark for the most offensive boards with 44.
Oh, that's awesome.
So Wilt's boards were mostly defensive.
Moses.
Kind of ironic. John Stockton once had 9 assists in one quarter.
That's believable.
He was ridiculous. Yeah, 1989 was the peak of his career. Stands as the most dishes in a quarter in All-Star game history. And Dr. J makes the list here.
Julius.
He once attempted 11 free throws in a quarter. 1978. He was just getting hacked the entire quarter.
Oh, yeah.
Just getting hacked. Still stands as the most free throws attempted by a player in a quarter in All-Star game history.
Oof.
There, actually, believe it or not here at Zach, there have only been 4 triple-doubles in the history of the game. 4.
4 triple-doubles in the history of the All-Star game.
Give me one of the guys. Just thought of name. One of the guys. Obvious ones. The most obvious that in our era.
I'll go Michael Jordan.
Well, there you go. MJ won.
There we go.
The most obvious of this era, LeBron.
LeBron. That would make sense.
And then D. Wade and KD.
Oh, wow.
Only 4 triple-doubles. I was most surprised by that number.
Only 4?
In the history of the All-Star game.
Wow.
Now, I have to end this segment the right way. The late, great Kobe Bryant has the most career steals in All-Star game history with 38.
Whew.
We miss Kobe a lot, man.
Oh, yeah. Kobe, one of the greats.
Absolutely. Tech, numbers don't lie.
Vet Alumni. And now, it's the Vet Line.
Answer the damn phone.
Today on the Vet Line, we're joined by Vince Quinn, CBS Sports Radio and WIP host and partner at Last Out Media, and a member of the Vet Alumni. Vince, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, Prem, Tech, happy to be back, guys.
Most definitely.
Yes, sir.
We had Rob Motti came back on as a repeat Vet alumnus, and you are the second repeat Vet alumnus guest.
There we go. I'll take it. I'm happy to be behind Rob Motti. That's awesome.
Absolutely. So the Phillies are back. Tech and I are pretty excited about baseball. Give us your season outlook and a win prediction for these Phils.
Yeah, so right now, I mean, the biggest thing is you got to see how the bullpen goes. You got to figure it's going to be better than it was last year. So if the bullpen's better and they're not blowing as many games in just the worst, I mean, most catastrophic ways.
I know.
Oh, man.
You got to figure this is above 500 team, right? Like, they got to be a little bit better than people are making them out to be. I would figure something like 85, 86 wins is totally on the table if the offense is still close to as good as they were last year. And you brought back Real Muto, you bring back Didi. So there's a lot of good vibes around the team. It's just that everybody else in the division has made moves, and so there's so much more excitement and buzz around those teams. But, like, the Phillies are pretty good. You know, they're a pretty good squad.
Yeah, they should score. And you alluded to the ridiculous nature of how they were blowing some of these games. I mean, I could think of 10 right
Easy.
Off top of my head where they would have been in the playoffs if they would have had a little bit better performance.
Yeah. One game.
That's it. That's remarkable. Remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, and it's the way they did it, right? Like, that's one of the things I really admire about the team, to be honest with you, is you think about last season, and when you've got all these games where they're up, like, I mean, 6 or 7 runs in the middle of the game, and it should be over, and they would lose, and you knew they were going to lose. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they were going through that all season long, and they still showed up, and they still kicked ass at the plate, and they dragged it out as far as they could. I mean, that was an impressive and gutsy effort for a team that didn't publicly, you know, you didn't have players coming out all the time and killing the bullpen every second of every day. Like, it could have been really ugly, and it wasn't that bad. So I think they're in a good spot this year.
I do, too. I think Joe Girardi will continue to assert his strong presence, and I like his energy. A lot different than what we had with Gabe, to say the least. Odubel Herrera, quite a conundrum with Odubel Herrera, but he's having a very energetic spring so far, looking like one of the better players in the lineup right now. What's your take on the whole Odubel situation?
Well, yeah, the tough thing is, I mean, people wanted to cut Odubel Herrera, and I understand that. Typically, when you have, especially because we're such a football town, when you see that happen in football, those guys get cut, right? Unless you're an absolute bona fide superstar, they get cut. And so that's what people wanted to see. But the problem is the rules don't allow you to do that. So he got suspended. He just kind of sat in purgatory all last year. He's here. Like, you have to face the fact and just acknowledge that Odubel Herrera is here. And for this baseball team, when their job is to win games, they know him. You know what I mean? So for the personal level, it has been a little bit of time. Has he made any changes? Is he a different person? I don't know. That's up to Philly. You know, they make those evaluations of his character. I just have no idea. But from the baseball standpoint, you have him on the roster. So if he's showing up and he's playing well, you got to use him. Like, you owe it to everybody else on the team if he's going to be on the roster to play him. And so for him to be coming out and making some noise, that's the kind of guy that he is, right? I mean, he had seasons where he's hitting like 315 and you go, holy shit, this guy's really good.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, he goes into a slump and he's awful. But like, man, when he's hot, he was one of the better hitters in baseball. And so that's the thing. You might not like him and you might not like that he's here, but they're stuck with him and you just got to make the most of it.
Is the backlash justified either way?
Well, yeah, I mean, I get why people are sensitive to the issue, right? I mean, he beat up a girl. Like, he's a professional athlete that's hitting on a woman. So, yeah, I understand why he's not popular. And he hasn't done anything, because here's the thing, too, right? Like, for anybody that's gone through stuff like that, like any major professional athlete of any kind, they either change cities, so it's not the same reputation. Like,
right.
They come into town and people are like, oh, yeah, he had this thing, and that's why he was available and he came here. But also, yeah, he hit 315 this year, and he hit, you know, this many home runs. And, like, then people get over it quickly because it didn't happen to them. It wasn't discussed on the radio or on the blogs or on Twitter the same way it was wherever it happened. So, you know, for him to still be in Philly and not have games to move on from this, right? Like, I don't think he's played a single game for the Phillies since it happened. So you don't have to look at him in the Phillies uniform doing different things in the course of the season with all the other storylines. That's the only thing that sticks in your mind. That is the first thing that people think about with Herrera. So all of that's piled up for a year now. And in some way, it's made the vitriol worse, right? Because that's all it's been.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a really curious and bizarre and unique situation. And given the kind of player he is, where he just makes dumb mistakes from time to time, like, his focus is not always there. He wasn't all that popular. Like, he was a polarizing player before. It's just a weird spot. I mean, ultimately, I think he's going to get out of town, but for this season, yeah, people are not going to like that guy. When you get fans in the stands, I would figure he gets booed. I'd basically guarantee it.
Yeah, I could see that.
Probably right, unfortunately.
Rhys Hoskins, Vince, he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. What kind of Rhys are you expecting to see this season?
Man, that's always the frustrating thing, right? Seriously, because you know what he is. When he's on, he's just like the most fun, exciting thing you'll ever see. And at the very least, I mean, the nice thing is, I'll say this about Rhys. I'm not sure what we're going to get. But you know what the floor of Rhys Hoskins is, and the floor is acceptable. I mean, if he's going to walk basically every time he's at the plate, I'll take that. You know, if he's going to walk all the time and be an acceptable fielder, that's okay. You know, as long as they can find ways to get him out of the lineup here and there, get gloves in at first base from time to time. Like, if they can figure all that stuff out, he's at least moving forward. His on-base percentage is good. So for Rhys, I'd love to see him break out. I mean, I don't know what the odds are that he fully puts it together for a full season. But again, the floor is good enough. And for what he's slotted to be in the lineup, that's enough.
Yeah.
Shifting to the Sixers now. In your opinion, Vince, you think they're going to overtake the Nets when it's all said and done for the East? And why do you not think that either way?
Man, that's a tough one, right? I mean,
I know.
The crazy thing is when you're thinking about the Nets, and yeah, and I'd love to talk to you guys about it, because, like, you look at the Nets, and the first thing for me is I get all the crazy star talent they've got, and it is tough to stop all those guys consistently, but also I don't know if it's to the point where when you do have three stars, like, those guys do need to take, like, somebody's got to take a significant hit, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what the odds are they're all going to average 35 points in a playoff series. So when it comes to the playoffs and the dynamics change and it is a little more rigid with, like, all right, this is going to be our first option, this is going to be our second, this is going to be our third option, how does that all shake out? And then for the Sixers, how do you prioritize that defensively? I mean, the nice thing is that at the very least, you have Embiid, and they don't have a matchup for that.
No.
I mean, they just don't. So that's something you can bank on, right? So, like, that's one of those things where I worry about the Nets. I think you have to worry about the Nets, obviously, but, like, I'm not shaking in my boots right now. You know, it's not like the Nets are prohibitively better as much as at the beginning of the season it felt like they would be. So, I mean, I feel okay about it, and you just kind of want to see what some of these matchups look like, you know, regular season games, and if they even end up playing the Nets at all in the playoffs. So I'm just kind of curious on you guys how you feel about it.
Yeah, I have mixed emotions on it because I think that the team chemistry and intangibles, that aspect is a little understated sometimes. And with the Sixers, you know, you have a squad that has been in the playoffs now, what, three straight seasons or four? This will be four straight seasons, I believe, maybe five, with the same core.
Yeah.
They've dealt with heart-wrenching losses like the quadruple doink, you know, all these terrible losses they've had, getting destroyed by the Celtics the one year. I feel like that experience playing together in those tight situations can really rise to the top in a conference final series potentially. But I still haven't seen enough. The Jazz game was very encouraging to overcome 21 threes.
Great win.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
But I really don't know, Vince.
That win was huge.
It was.
And that's the thing, right? Like, I look at the team, and one of the biggest things for me is trying to figure out who the Sixers are. Like, I don't know if you guys remember this. I mean, what was it? The Karl Anthony Towns fight happens, right? And then once that went down, whenever that was, Embiid was just like, he had no idea who he was anymore. He was miserable all the time. He just didn't have his typical energy about him. And you see what he's doing now. I mean, he is tweeting funny. Like, the guy's in quarantine because a barber had COVID.
It's ridiculous.
You know? He missed the All-Star game.
A joke.
And he's popping off jokes on Twitter. So I see that, and I go, like, this is Embiid. Like, he's fully found himself in every way. And I think the quadruple doink and him posted the picture of himself crying and all those things, it's all piled up for him specifically, you know?
Yeah.
He's been through so much. His brother died. He's got married. Like, he's been through everything. And so for a guy of his age that's been through everything that he's been through, he just gets it now. Like, he's just got all the maturity that you could possibly look for, and you're seeing the complete player. When the coaching is there, when the fit of the team is there, he's just running on every single level. So you go, okay, if the Sixers hit some adversity here, and yeah, maybe they're down like two games to the Nets. Maybe that happens. But like, I don't see them quitting in a series like that. And at the very least, you're going to get the full extent of what they got. They just have that maturity now. They've got the leadership now. Everything fits. So I just love the vibe around this team. It's something I didn't know if we'd ever see the Sixers look like this. As much as you knew they could have it, I never knew if it would actually come together. And it's here.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of move do you envision them being able to make at the deadline to really get them closer to the goal of being in the finals?
Well, the nice thing is I could see him doing anything, right? Like, I believe Daryl Morey could do anything. If he wants to bring Michael Jordan out of retirement and have him still be getting an efficient 25 points a night, I think Daryl Morey can do that. He's a magic man. And so when you got a guy like that that's going to include himself in any kind of conversation and give the team an opportunity to improve, I mean, does he do a couple of moves to improve the back end? Maybe. Does he go all in and get a Bradley Beal or a Zach LaVine or something like that? Maybe. And so knowing that he's a guy that's willing to be in those conversations, take risks in those moments because they were on the doorstep of landing James Harden, I mean, all those things are there to the point where you go, they can't get anyone. And so whatever they do, you just got to believe that Morey's making the best investment for the organization, right? It's like, how much do you trust that guy is really the biggest question. Because if he goes and he's exploring the market as much as he does, and he goes, okay, trading, you know, Maxey in a pick or something else, is Kyle Lowry and getting him in, like, that's the deal. That you go, you know what, maybe that was the best deal that the Sixers had, and you made the best move to improve the team. So I don't think he's going to overspend if he doesn't have to. I think he's got a good read of the room. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just nice to know anything's possible. And I think the most likely thing would be Lowry. It just makes sense for so many reasons. But
yeah,
it's the NBA, man. So
I don't want to give up a lot. I don't want to give up a lot to get him, though, Vince. I don't want to give up a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a young guy, expiring contract, a pick. I'm not trying to go overboard and give them Maxey and Matisse and Shake and all. I don't want to go overboard just for an aging Kyle Lowry who's, you know, on the other side of his career.
I hear that. I mean, what, he's 35, right? So he's played a ton of minutes in the NBA.
Yeah.
He's been around forever. So there's hesitation there, and you got to balance the short term and the long term. But I love Maxey, too. I think he's fun. I think he's got a great ceiling. He's got great potential. But if you're trying to win right now, and you can give up a guy that's not going to be in the playoff rotation, it is hard to say no.
Yeah, you know? That's a good point.
That's true. All right, Vince, before we let you go, Howie Roseman has been called public enemy number one by most of this fan base, us included. In your opinion, does this report about Jeffrey Lurie this week let Howie off the hook at all?
Ooh, that's on some level, it ties his hands with the biggest decision the franchise is making, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to look at the season and whatever Jalen Hurts becomes, that's going to be a big question. Because, I mean, think about this, right? Let's consider the scenario. How many times in the past year have you heard the name Justin Jefferson? How many, right?
Like, Way too many.
It's just, yeah, it's all people talk about. So if the Eagles get to six and Zach Wilson is on the board at six, or Fields or Lance, whoever, and one of those guys takes off and the Eagles go with Devontae Smith or Kyle Pitts or Sewell or whatever. Like, think of anybody that isn't one of those quarterbacks, and Hurts isn't that good, and the quarterback is great. Roseman is going to get killed, right or wrong. And clearly, if it's a Lurie thing, it's a Lurie problem. So there is something to be said for that, for sure. I mean, the biggest thing that worries me when it comes to Howie Roseman and putting blame on the team is, like, I don't know if you guys saw NBC Sports put up a piece about the Darius Slay contract. I mean, that guy's going to be making over $20 million a year 2 years from now.
Wow.
Which is a massive problem.
Wow. Yes.
So that's a ton of money, and it's a big cap hit if they cut him. They're going to lose at least like $10 million they're going to eat if they cut him then. So when you're trying to restructure the books and you're moving all this money down on guys that, like, I mean, Darius Slay was fine this year. He was okay. Like, he wasn't awful, but he wasn't superstar Darius Slay.
No.
So now you got a new defense in. He's on the wrong side of 30. Like, those are the kinds of things that don't pile up all that well. Now you're restructuring a deal where technically the year is linked to 5 years at this point. Now,
wow.
You know, typical Howie Roseman, like, years to cancel and stuff. But it's crazy. I mean, that is a crazy deal. And so Roseman, as much as for this season and where things go with Hurts and the quarterback and all that stuff, you do have to give him a pass if he is just outright closed out. Like, that door is not available for drafting a quarterback. You do have to give him some leeway with this. But, man, the long-term value of the organization and where the cap hits are going to be and what kind of talent they can bring in or can't bring in. I mean, Roseman's accountable for all of that because this is his career. He's restructuring and pushing money, and he's doing it again. And who knows how it affects the team down the line. It sucks, man. It sucks.
It does
Yeah,
suck.
They're in an interesting situation. Hey, but what I can say, Vince, in closing is we got one ring largely in part to Howie Roseman. That's the irony of this whole situation, you know?
It is. I mean, that guy, he pitched a perfect 2017. Like, he had a Brad Lidge 2017.
Yes.
And everything hit. I mean, it was crazy. Patrick Robinson coming out of the woodwork and all. That was an unbelievable year. So he's always going to have that, and you always have to talk about it. But, man, I mean, he's stunk since. And I've been a Howie guy. But you just can't support this guy anymore. It's just, it's over.
Yeah, wow, that's a hot take right there. It's a hot take. I won't say it's over until I see a full season from Jalen Hurts. You know, we talked about this on the show today, me and Tech. You know, you got to give a guy like that just a chance to play, give him his rookie starting season. Maybe he comes out and looks like Carson did in his rookie year. I mean, we don't know yet, you know?
It is a shame that we didn't get those extra games, right? Like, one of the things I was thinking about the other day was you got fans back in the stadiums now. Like, that's going to be continuing to grow. You got to figure by the time we get the football season, if everything tracks, we could have full stadiums or really close to it. And so if you had a full crowd, like, does Wentz get benched earlier last season? Do you get more games from Jalen Hurts? How much more valuable would that information be? Like, four games is not a lot.
No.
You know, there was times where five or six games into a season, Ryan Fitzpatrick was the certified MVP of the league. Like,
it's
that's
crazy.
A real conversation that's happened, you know?
I know.
And so you see what happens over those other games. Like, you just only have four to look at Jalen Hurts for a guy that you knew was a project player that gave you little fun moments, but nothing that, like, necessarily wowed you to the point of believing he's a superstar. It's just, it's unfortunate to miss out on those looks because they were trying to get Carson going, and then he hated the team so much he wanted out of
it. Yeah, it's epic failure. But hey, we turned the page, and Vince, we always appreciate talking to you. Good insight, good info, and hopefully we will talk next time when the Phillies are on their way to a playoff berth.
Yeah, there we go. That sounds good to me. You feel free to give me a call up. Let's talk quality Phillies playoff baseball.
I'm trying to speak it into existence here.
Fantastic.
And yeah, man. Hope you have a good one. We really appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, fellas, happy to hop on. Glad you guys are doing well. Glad the show is going well. And we'll be in touch.
Sounds good, Vince. Thanks again.
Thanks, Vince.
Take it easy, fellas.
It's time for Prem's Picks.
These games are a blowout, a human lock. You can bet your children's unborn children on these games.
Prem's Picks, and you are still on fire.
Tech, I bring an unblemished 9-0 record into the week picking NBA games.
9-0!
After the Blazers handled the Warriors at home in a close game, only a 2-point win, because Damian Lillard is a monster in clutch time. He's just, really, he reminds me of MJ in that regard.
Yeah, he's
fantastic. One of the closest I've seen in crunch time to MJ. So they covered, they handled the Warriors straight up, winning. And the Nets easily covered the 8 points in Houston, and James Harden returned.
Yes, they did.
To Houston. I simply can't pick wrong. Now,
no.
Here's the thing.
Money in the bank.
You would hope so. It continues. You would hope that it continues because the All-Star break messes up the ebb and flow. You know,
yeah.
Coming off an All-Star break, it's tough to pick because most of the NBA games picking structure, how I pick, is based on previous time off, playing time, traveling. Everyone's fresh now.
Yeah.
So there's only two games on tonight's slate. One of them I like. Give me Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook for the Wizards on the road. 3-point dogs at Memphis tonight. I just feel like they should be 3-point favorites. I think they cover the three or win the game outright. Wizards plus 3 tonight in Memphis. Lock.
Lock.
Next, Thursday's slate is pretty loaded. And I like the Hawks on the road to beat the Raptors and winning the game straight up.
Really?
I do. Atlanta is a young, sneaky team.
This might give you your first blemish.
They can get going, man. You know, Toronto's overrated, albeit they're under 500, or two games under 500.
Yeah, true.
They're playing in Tampa Bay, I believe, because they can't play in
That's
Toronto.
Right.
So it isn't even a real... It's a short trip for the Hawks.
Yeah.
Coming off the break. Trae Young and the Hawks straight up. To beat Toronto tomorrow night, lock.
Lock.
So to recap, we got the Wizards tonight in Memphis, plus 3.
Lock.
Hawks straight up to beat Toronto tomorrow night.
Lock.
This has been Prem's NBA Picks, 11-0.
11-0, that's what you're going for.
That's what we're going for, coming up.
We'll see, all right? See you next week.
Vet Alumni.